shoot you right down at all your feet. Take you home with me, put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. John Lee Hooker, I tell you what, today was the day that he passed away, and he was one of my favorites. I first saw him in 1963-4 at the Blues Festival in Newport, followed him ever since. He was one of the greats. He never stopped. He grew from his roots as a country blues player, to becoming playing with every great blues and rock musician, classical musician you can imagine. The man never stopped learning and changing. It shows you can get old, but don't have to stop growing. John Lee Hooker. So we at least got a little boom, boom, boom in there before the day was out. Maybe we get one more in before the end of the hour. And we are going to switch gears here, back to Baltimore. Really, it's a Baltimore story, but we covered this some yesterday with the young woman who's a filmmaker about what was going on in Brooklyn, in my Brooklyn it was called, because this is happening in every city in America. This particular show was inspired because of Dr. Lawrence Brown. He's a political activist, a public health consultant, a history aficionado, assistant professor of public health here at Morgan State University, who has partnered with community groups in East Baltimore to devise strategies to assist residents who were displaced from their community by EBDI and Johns Hopkins University, who wrote a piece in the Indie Reader that just grabbed me. I just love this piece that he wrote. It was called Avarice and Avatar in Charm City, Stepping Up the Fight Against Displacement and Dispossession. And it's good to have you in the studio. Welcome, Lawrence. Good to have you here.
Man, thanks for having me.
And a woman who has been an activist for this kind of a project stuff for a long time, Dr. Judy Lombardi, who's a political activist for the Gentrification Not K, parentheses, N-O-T project. Good to have you here, Judy. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here.
Good to see you.
Who joined us here a few months back when we did a live show with the Baltimore Blend. From
Station North.
Yes,
Arts Cafe.
Good spot to eat. So anyway, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to let you begin a bit. Talk about your thesis, Avarice and Avatar, and how the movie Avatar fits into what we're seeing in Baltimore. And while you're doing that, I'm going to step over here and get my plug so I can plug in my computer before it dies.
All right. Well, thanks for having me once again. I'm very thankful to the Indie Reader for publishing this piece. The thesis basically is that what was depicted in the movie Avatar was really an illumination of course, not only the 500-year history of colonialism, of imperialism in American history, but it's also, you know, very much parallel to what's going on now and what's taking place here in Baltimore, which, of course, includes everything from gentrification to the abuse of eminent domain. And a lot of these things are depicted in the movie, you know, when the corporate interests are trying to obtain the mineral that they like. They first set up a school. They want to educate the natives. They employ scientists and science and research to try to see what the Na'vi, the natives of the planet Pandora, what they want. And before they use force to actually force them out of there. And so I tried to make the connection that a lot of the tactics that they used in that film are tactics that are being used now in EBDI and Johns Hopkins University.
Now, EBDI is not here to defend themselves. I might play EBDI for you as a point counterpoint here so I can get back to my acting days. But I'm curious, what do you mean by that? I mean, some people would think, let me just be very serious for a moment, some people would think that it is a theoretical and practical stretch. I'm sure folks who are developers in Baltimore feel that it's a theoretical and practical stretch to liken the resettlement of Native Americans to reservations and the Trail of Tears, where Native folks under Andrew Jackson, the president who allegedly brought democracy to America, moved Indians from the East Coast to Oklahoma to the terrorism that killed Black Wall Street and all the other towns were blown up, like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to the Japanese internment. And you are saying that the displacing of over 800 African Americans during the Broadway Project of the 1950s and beyond to now is the same. So that's the stretch I think most people say, right. What is he talking about? That's not the same thing.
Right. Well, part of my thesis is that there is no other way to understand this except to see this type of activity as a part of American apartheid. And I follow scholar Mindy Fully Love, when she describes that apartheid in America is not only segregation when you're forcing people to live in a certain place, but it's also serial forced displacement when you force people to leave certain places, and land dispossession as well. So it's the combination of the way things have been practiced here in America. And so all of those things that you mentioned, whether it's the displacement of Native Americans and the Trail of Tears, or the internment of Japanese Americans in internment camps, whether it's Black Wall Street, which was destroyed in Tulsa, or other race riots in Wilmington, North Carolina, East St. Louis, or Atlanta in 1906, that all of those sorts of things, the land dispossession of Black farmers that took place in the middle part of the last century, all of these processes and policies which contributed to pushing people out of certain areas or containing people in certain areas are all a part of this legacy of American apartheid. And what's going on today is a continuation of those very same processes and policies.
Judy, good to have you. Good to see you again.
Great to see you.
And you've been in this kind of struggle around neighborhoods for a long, long time. It's been one of your intellectual, gut, visceral organizing issues for as long as I've known you. So what did you think about this thesis?
Makes total sense to me.
Oh, why am I not surprised?
It's very systemic. It's looking at the subtleties. And I would go further to say it's about colonization in general, which brings us back to the global view. It's local, it's national, and it's global in the sense that this displacement or this type of serial force displacement is happening all around the world.
Now, one of the things that there's a, I think you brought a DVD, I'm having a hard time getting it working through the computer. If they can, they will. If they can't, we won't be able to play.
That's cool.
Let's examine what's going on here. We've done a lot of shows over the years around, about EBDI, and about then we did a show recently on what it would take to about the people being moved out from homes in neighborhoods where there's maybe one house on the block and all the other houses are abandoned, and so people being sent somewhere else while they tear down those neighborhoods. And there's a real debate over what housing really costs. We've gotten numbers from people in the developing world, the developers world, and numbers from people who are supporting neighborhood community groups with very different numbers about what it costs to redo housing in Baltimore, which we'll be doing a show on the next 2 weeks here, several shows. So the question is, what is afoot here for you? Well, why is it happening? I mean, why is it that this is going on? We know that the poverty that has exploded in cities like Baltimore in our town had a lot to do with the deindustrialization of the city, a lot to do with people losing their jobs. Some of us who grew up in this town knew that, you know, the poor working folks, Black and white, who maybe finished high school but didn't, could find a job, whether it paid less or whether it paid steel mill wages or auto wages. There was stability. I mean, I drive through these neighborhoods with my producer sometimes, and I kind of remember these neighborhoods as a kid, because I ran over in the East Side, National Avenue, as a little boy on Broadway, and there was poverty, but every house there was filled with a family. And so what is going on? I mean, what is the analysis? Your analysis of why this is happening? What's under this?
Well, a big part of it, Dr. Homer Favors just passed.
May he rest in peace. One of the great men of our time.
Absolutely, a member of the Goon Squad, and he said in a 1978 article in the Afro, the Baltimore Afro-American.
78, you're about to.
78. He said, it seems to me that the city has indicated that it will attempt to solve the city's problems by bringing in middle class and upper middle class privilege, basically whites, and dislocating Blacks who are here and then viewing this transformation as a major accomplishment. And so people such as Dr. Favor back in 78 who understood what was going on and saw this coming, and it has happened in much the same way. You talked about post-industrialization, the loss of manufacturing, the decline in terms of wealth that people have in the city. One of the shows, the greatest American drama in our history, The Wire, illustrates what happens to men when they lose work. Showing the Sabacas, the union in season two, the Barksdales in season one, people turn to these illegal means. And a big part of that thesis was that everything is connected. When we have corporate interests who are hijacking our government, who are basically funding our politicians, sponsoring these mega development projects, not allowing people who are from Baltimore to work on these projects, employing eminent domain to kick people out of land that they've owned, especially like we had in Middle East where EBDI is operating now, that all of this is connected and is really disempowering and harming the average everyday person. And that's a part of the pain that I think we see here in Baltimore because of this sort of behavior.
Judy?
I'd like to point out one possible solution.
Please.
Dr. Mindy Fulalove, what a name, huh? Talks about we have historical buildings. We preserve historical buildings. We need to start preserving historical neighborhoods. And I think this is one of the ways we need to organize and act. And I can think of a neighborhood right in Station North that I would like to draw a circle around and say, you cannot destroy this neighborhood.
What's the neighborhood you're talking about?
Greenmount West.
Which is mostly African-American, poor working-class families and working-class families.
Yes, and now we have a new design school. We have the tool library. We have very expensive housing going up. That's fine, but we need to conserve the people and the homes that are living there and help them do it. We can't do it.
So I'm going to talk about the contradictions here that exist, and let you have comment on them. But first, yeah, we have a clip that did get queued up, and we'll come right back to what you were saying. So what are we about to listen to? What is the DVD you brought in?
Well, the DVD is the movie The Gentrification Knot.
K-N-O-T.
Thank you very much. Documentary, which is a weaving of three events that happened here in Baltimore over the last year while I've been focusing specifically on Station North and this particular issue. And one is the 10th anniversary of the Station North Arts Entertainment sponsored event for the 10th anniversary of Station North. The second is the event you were at. In fact, I think you're in this piece we're going to listen to.
Oh, my.
On 12-12-12 at the Station North Arts Cafe as part of the Gentrification Knot Project. And the third piece are segments from the March, the incredible March conference that was a very hopeful event about sustainability and development here in Baltimore.
So all this is in this documentary. And how long is this piece we're about to listen to, Bobby? How long is this piece so we get a sense of what we got left here? But let's hear this. I don't know what's on this piece.
I'm not quite sure either. I'm looking
forward to hearing the whole thing. But it's a very short clip. Let's listen to it and come back and continue our conversation. And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. What are your thoughts on how we should push this? This is one of the issues we've been pushing a lot on the Steiner Show for 20 years. And now we're at a critical moment with Station Arts North and other things going on that we have to raise these issues again. The clip.
Maybe John will talk to us. John Waters.
It can be good and it can be bad. If a neighborhood's really dying, I would think it's great. If gay people move in, they fix it up. It's good for the neighborhood. But you can over-gentrify it, so we don't want Hampton to become Canton. You know, I'm not against gentrification. All these buildings that are boarded up, I wish somebody would gentrify them in the city. And I love taking a neighborhood that's really down and starting to build it up, and that's when all artists, creative people move in there because it's cheap, and then they make it better. And I'm for it. So actually, I'm for it.
So now we just heard John. I remember that when we played that at downtown Kevin Brown's Cafe in the district, it's a really great place. But anyway, so you hear John Waters saying what he said. He wants gentrification. People do want gentrification. And you were just saying that. So part of the argument is, let's say a neighborhood like Station Arts North, they want artists to move in. But artists are saying if they gentrify, we can't afford it, A. And B, we're talking about white artists, not black and white artists. There are equal amounts of black and white creative people in this town, maybe more black African-American creative people in this town. Are they part of this? Are they going to be in this neighborhood? It's just going to be white artists in this neighborhood. And what does it mean? It's a long, broad thing here. But what does it mean to say, yes, you can gentrify a neighborhood, in other words, bring people in with money, but not dispossess the people who already live there? So you have a mixed income neighborhood, maybe. What does that look like? How do we do that? What does that mean?
Right.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that from my point of view, and this movie is about defining gentrification. From my point of view, it would not be gentrification if no one was displaced. Mm-hmm. Because that is specifically what gentrification means as defined in 1964 by Ruth Glass. Mm-hmm. Pointing at gentry, pointing at it being a class issue. And it was actually a community in London that she was studying where middle-class white people moved in to a working-class white neighborhood. And in the revitalization, the working-class white people could no longer afford to live in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Hence, gentrification. So I would say that if we didn't kick people out of their homes, then we wouldn't have – we need a new word.
We need a new word story, and a new concept, a new way of doing things.
We need
Well, you know, that's the problem in the Middle East community in East Baltimore.
Whose name has been changed now.
Right. And that's a whole other issue, the Eager Park issue.
It's not Eager Park. It's no longer Middle East. It's like South Baltimore. It's no more South Baltimore. It's Federal Hill, which was only the park when I was growing
up. Right.
Yeah.
You know, which is disrespectful to the legacy of the activist Lucille Gorham, who named that neighborhood.
Yes.
And that's a part of this issue of gentrification and displacement, is that it not only displaces people, but it harms a culture. It disrupts a cultural legacy. And so in the 1950s, Johns Hopkins University displaced over 800 African-American families in the Broadway Project. And this is detailed in Maricela Gomez's book, Race, Class, Power, and Organizing in East Baltimore. And then following up and displacing over 700 African-American families in Middle East in the 2000s through their proxy organization, EBDI. And so it's, again, this issue of corporate interests wanting something, wanting to occupy the wealth that, which is symbolized in the land, and displacing people, displacing their form of their wealth that they have in their home, and disrupting a cultural legacy, and that's what ties it back to the systematic occurrences that have taken place in American history. Antero Patel, in his book, Not in My Neighborhood, How Bigotry Shaped a Great American City. This is a form of bigotry. This is a form of imperialism. It's a form of American racism. It's racial terrorism as well. When you talk about white supremacy, in his book, Antero Patel talks about eugenics, science that ranked and ordered which races were at the top and which races were at the bottom. And you only see this behavior taking place, gentrification and displacement, with those races that are at the bottom. That's white supremacy. And that's why we have to fight this part of American apartheid.
Let me just stretch a little bit further, though it's not the case in Baltimore right now, but it has been in the past, which is why working class ethnic white people were moved out of the East Side and into the counties. And you see it happening around the country where in places, this may be a left field in some ways, but mm-hmm. I don't think it is, mm-hmm. in Wyoming, mm-hmm. where I go to visit my friends on the res, there are all kinds of places out there where white, rural, working class people, most of whom are on the right and would like to do away with the Indians, that notwithstanding, mm-hmm. they are being pushed out of their homes by the wealthy who want their homes now because mm-hmm. it's a beautiful place to live. So while you might be a ranch hand, mm-hmm. it's not your place anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't care if your family's lived here for mm-hmm. 300 years. Mm-hmm. We don't care.
Right.
And so, it is. It's going on. I mean, you point out here, you say that unlike Avatar, where corporate investors sponsor the military force who will occupy Pandora, mm-hmm. the planet, we as taxpayers are sponsoring displacement and dispossession. We are sponsoring the multiple forms of displacement and dispossession that are reflective of American apartheid, which is what you use here. And you talk about the avarice and the abject greed on display by corporate developers are not a new phenomenon. You go on to describe that.
Right.
So, and I'd like you to describe this for a minute because it's difficult, I think, for the media mm-hmm. and other people to put their hands around a description for most Baltimoreans and most people live in this area to really understand what's going on. You know, because the developers make a good argument, and the city government makes a good argument that this is tax dollars. We may say Under Armour, you can have $35 million mm-hmm. for Locust Point. That's because you're going to bring us jobs, and that's why we're giving it to you. And people have a really hard time figuring this out.
Well, there's a great way to figure it out. That's why I love The Wire, because David Simon talks about the game being rigged, and this is a game for corporate developers, and the game is serial forced displacement. It's land dispossession, it's segregation historically, and it's a matter of saying, well, you have property and we want it, and we're going to take it. We're going to find a way to do it, and we're going to use the law to land jack, to confiscate the land that we want, and that's done through eminent domain. And that eminent domain, that's something that really needs to be changed. When the Supreme Court handed down Kelo versus New London, the city of New London, in 2005. It expanded the power of the government to take land, well, not just for public good, but for private interests. And your guest talked earlier about, you know, the expansion of the National Security Administration's surveillance being done by private corporations. Well, that's what we're dealing with. Citizens United. We're dealing with corporate interests becoming more and more powerful and demeaning and devaluing the everyday person, especially if you're black and especially if you're poor. And so those are the types of things that we're going to have to confront if we're going to deal with this, because it's devaluing, it's harming people's health, it's contributing to mass unemployment. And of course, all those things turn around and contribute to crime and antisocial behavior. As the show says, everything is connected.
It's what I was thinking.
Everything is connected.
And so what is the – and folks, in the last 10 minutes or so we have here, join us at 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts on what you think we should be doing instead. We can expand this conversation over the next few weeks, but I'd like to hear your thoughts now. And so, Judy, what would be the alternative? What is another way for us to do this?
To prevent?
Well, in other words, whether it's EBDI, whether it's Hopkins saying we want to build a new school, we want to build the neighborhood around here, we want to, you know, to make it work, whether it's what's going on in the Station North Arts District.
Let's go there. So we have a neighborhood. This is a common thing. Yesterday, My Brooklyn, the woman who directed that, talked about this, how it's not uncommon for one of the techniques to be to bring an artist to improve a neighborhood. Okay, so we now have the Arts Station.
The creative class. You can't argue against the creative class.
I'm not arguing against.
Right.
I'm not arguing against anything per se.
Right.
I don't want any enemies. But anyway, so you bring the artist in to make it better, right? That's the idea. So my desire, and part of this movie, is to begin to help or persuade people to change their minds about gentrification and for us to know what it is and say we don't want it and then begin to vision ways to prevent it. And there are lots of ways. First of all, organize. You have to have participation by all. The people who live there, the residents are the primary people, and their vision is what we need to focus on. And we need to honor their neighborhood and preserve it.
So let me open the phones again here, 410-319-8888. And Albert, you're on the air.
Hello.
Welcome.
I just wanted to comment that in 1953 in D.C., they did the first urban renewal in the country, which we call later urban removal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There was a ghetto in southwest D.C., outdoor toilets within sight of the Capitol, and they moved the ghetto from southwest D.C. to far northeast into projects which fell apart after 30, 40 years and then began the gentrification of Washington, D.C. Gradually from being chocolate city to now it's a majority white and Hispanic. And the gentrification followed urban removal.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it was also called Negro removal
as well.
Again, this redevelopment, which involves eminent domain and displacement, is a continuation of this sort of history. And I think in order for us to combat it, we need to understand this history. We need to understand the totality of it so we can apply solutions that will actually fit the problem. And the problem is much more massive than I think we've ever really understood. It is always involved for black people, for poor people in this country. There's always been this issue of dispossession and displacement, from disinvestment to corporate plutocracy. These issues are all intertwined and hurting people. As I work in East Baltimore, I listen to the pain of activists like Donald Gresham or Miss Lucille Gorham, who was displaced out of her home and had to die in another neighborhood in a home that was rat infested. In a home where she didn't have access as a disabled woman. EBDI did not take care of her, and that was our most revered elder. And if you didn't take care of Miss Lucille Gorham, how many other elders were not taken care of? And you have to live your last dying days not surrounded by the people you know, not surrounded by the community you've grown to love, the community you've named. And so there's a real pain that's attached to this. And we have to find a way to address it in our organizing. And I think also in changing the system. You know, we have a strong mayor system here in Baltimore. We need to move to a council manager form of government. That will help us to increase participation. There's too much power invested in the hands of the mayor. And, you know, they're allowed, she's allowed, and whoever is in that position is allowed to run that game on us.
You know, and it was said the other night after our event here at WEAA at the Creative Alliance, Joy Scott and I were talking, and is one of our revered elders as
yes,
well, this
indeed.
Comedian, artist, incredible woman. She said, you know, we were talking about how hip-hop is being used in demonstrations against in Paris, against being removed from people's homes. And what's happening in Paris is what's happening in America, which is, there was an article in The Sun saying that poverty is growing in Baltimore County. Well, why is it growing in part?
Because
we're displacing people to Baltimore County.
Exactly.
And so we're going to create a city. We're trying to create a city of upper middle class people and put all the poor people to ring Baltimore and push them out there like they're doing in Paris and Berlin and London and other places. That same thing is happening here. And I don't know whether it's a conscious policy or whether it is just part of how people think and operate.
And see, I say that it's conscious. It's also, it's also cultural as well.
Well, down at Station Nord's Arts Cafe right now, we have on the wall, displacement. M-E-A-N-T. Is it meant?
I love
part
it,
of the exhibit.
I love what you do with
come
this stuff.
See
this
it.
Is great.
But I want to say the systemics of this is very important, and that we need to co-create a common vision. We need to articulate our desires, create networks for generating a society that we desire as a group.
Absolutely.
Not just some of us, but we, and develop a languaging to continue to work together through the conflict that will naturally emerge.
So we are not out of time with this conversation, at least for today, but we'll come back to it and invite you all back and really push this. And we need to push it, and maybe we can get some of this next week. We have to book some shows. It would be a good one to book to keep pushing it. Dr. Lawrence Brown from Morgan State University, Assistant Professor of Public Health, thank you for the article you wrote in Indie Reader.
Thank you.
We'll be linking to it on our website. Gita Lombardi, political activist with Gentrification, in parentheses, K-NOT Project.
Very good.
Always good to see you. Thank
always
you for all
pleasure.
The work you do. And we'll come back to this. This is critical. Sorry, folks, we couldn't get to all the calls coming at the last minute, but it was last minute, and we have to leave room for Michelle Martin and Tell Me More. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Henry, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineers, Andrea Melton, interns Lala Warshaw, Albert Phillips Jr., Daniel Dupree, Alexander Rudy, Sinead Hawkins, Kamani Seldon, theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Go to steinershow.org to find out information about our guests, and please download our shows and podcasts on iTunes as well. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.